Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. We are delighted, Bill Russell and I, that Lady James is our guest. Bill?
The quality of your writing, to be uninitiated, I keep going back to that, but it's just striking. Mm-hmm. One would presume, if one just picked up your books, that you were educated in the British system through Oxford and Cambridge and all those wonderful institutions, and that you had a deep educational background, and that you had started writing when you were very young.
Stereotypes.
Stereotypes, none of which is true, but I am struck by your ability to use language both as you speak it, but particularly as you write it. Is this just sort of come with the water in England? did you have to work at it, or did you just get lucky?
I think I was lucky. I mean, I think I was born loving language, loving words, loving books, and loving reading. But, of course, born in 1920. I was educated before the war in one of the called grammar schools, high schools. And the standard of education was very high.
They taught you grammar in grammar school.
They taught us grammar. They're not taught children and not, I mean, in London, in England, they're not taught grammar anymore. The standard is not as good. And it's beginning to show in public speech and even in the BBC. There has been a deplorable, I think, fall in the standard of spoken and written English. And there are young people who go to our major universities to read English, but really are not very competent in writing it well. We were taught it well, and also we had a great teaching in the English literature. I mean, we studied a Shakespeare play at least once a year and sometimes once a term. It was a marvelous education in literature. Of course, scientifically, it was not a very good education. I mean, children today have to learn things that were undreamed of. I mean, I can remember in the science lesson there being taught about the atom and being taught that the atom was the smallest portion of matter that existed in the world, and it could neither be altered nor split nor destroyed. That was the essence of the... Well, of course, down the road at the Cavendish Laboratory, Lord Rutherford was busy splitting it, as far as I know. So, you know, there's much more science for children to learn today. But certainly we were better educated in the humanities.
Well, and there's a tendency to say that it's not important, that we're just sticklers, and that you're being if you care about language, that we're just being needlessly
picky.
That's the word I was looking at. Self-conscious. That it's pretentious.
Oh, absolutely. There's that feeling.
But I suspect there is another perspective on that, and I would love to hear it because I think I share your view.
I think, yes, people can think. I mean, the word that is used back home is elitist. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're somehow despising people who can't use it as well. Nothing is further from the truth. I feel that if children are given the language and taught to use it and to love it, especially to use it creatively, you're giving them a great gift throughout life. And also, you are really sort of empowering them. It's all very well, you know, but in many ways in both our countries, certainly, if you like, the educated middle class have huge advantages. Now, one of those advantages is that they can express what they want and make themselves felt through the democratic process and in other ways. And if you empower people with language, you give them that strength. I mean, even if a parent just wants to go up to the school to consult one of the teachers about progress or to complain about something, the educated middle class do it with confidence. Some of the other classes don't feel that they can do this. And this is a question of language and of confidence in language, isn't it? So I think that literacy is tremendously important in giving us a more equal society. So it's not elitist, it's the absolute opposite of elitist. It's democratic,
because
exactly.
We fail people when we don't give them that access.
We absolutely do fail them. How can they, you know, be to take, I mean, of course, and at another level, in getting jobs? Even in having interviews, in writing applications, if people can't use language, and we're not expecting them to use I mean, we're not talking about using complicated or long or difficult words, but elegantly and simply and persuasively using the language. And I think Paul's absolutely right. If we don't give this, we are disadvantaged. We're not being elitist. We are being democratic if we think that everyone should have the chance.
And in a sense, the education you're talking about is knowing how to think, and then being able to communicate what you think, and being able to understand what someone else says to you when you think it. Yeah. All of which, as you say, supports democracy.
Yeah, indeed it does. Yes.
When people talk about the process of writing books, novels in particular, if I understand you correctly, you start them out saying you must read and you must develop your vocabulary, and in the context of this conversation it makes it all the more interesting that you are inviting people to more deeply engage in the process, but they can't do it without the tools.
No, they can't. And that's why, I mean, reading is so important to our young people, because with reading, the reader actually sort of contributes his or her imagination to the imagination of the writer. We form our own mental picture of what is going on, and we're reading the book, and we're in that world. Whereas, of course, with television, admirable as it may be in many ways, we are just contributing nothing. We sit down. That is why television is so relaxing. I mean, I'm sure both of you have been in the situation, and I certainly have, where, you know, at the end of the day, you are too tired to read, because you are too tired with your tired brain to contribute to the book, much as you love it. And then you can plonk down and put your feet up, and provided what's on the box is worth seeing, which it rarely is, nothing is demanded, and the pictures go in front of you, and you just, you know, relax.
You were on the board of governors of the BBC, which means
for 5 years, yes.
Which means you've got a perspective on that. And somewhere, I think it was in that context that you delivered a speech, and I think you said, in going back and looking at it, you were struck at how old-fashioned it appeared. And it goes, I think, to what we're talking about.
The ideas in the speech, the BBC.
Right. The things you were saying to the BBC, the kinds of things that you thought needed to be addressed, was kind of old-fashioned in the way you had presented it. And it sounds like it's the same kind of thing we're talking about. And my question, I think, is what has changed? I mean, you were a keen observer. You were articulate from 1920, say, to the year 2000. What is it that has made so much of a difference?
In broadcasting, in the BBC. Well,
I'm thinking, but in the cultural, I mean, the you talk about the language is not being used as well now.
That's true.
The quality of education is not what it was when you were growing up, for better or worse.
True. Yes.
But do you have a sense of what changed?
Other than educationally, are we talking?
I'm talking about in the environment as a whole. I mean,
I think there are considerable changes. I mean, England between 1920 and now is a multicultural, much more multicultural society. It's not as multicultural. I mean, I think we have 7%, as it were, ethnic minorities, which is not overwhelming, but in some cities they are now more or less in the majority, and you've probably got the same situation here. So that changes things, of course. I think we are a more violent society, no doubt at all about it, and in some ways a more criminal society. But I remember when I was talking to someone very interested in the criminal law, and I said, well, when I was a child, the house was never locked through all my childhood. But he said, yes, but what did you have to steal? And of course, he's absolutely right. I mean, short of if anybody carted out the furniture, but then they hadn't got the cars to take it away. And the car would be something you would watch, so they couldn't come from another city and cart your furniture away if they wanted to, even if it had been worth carting away. But there was no television, and there was no radio to take away. There were no videos to take away. There were no mobile phones to take away.
You probably didn't have a lot of jewels hidden in there.
And if you were, as we were, not a rich family, there were a lot of jewels to take away, so you know, there wasn't really anything very much to steal. And there was less vandalism. I think vandalism is a very, very distressing aspect of modern
life. Well, it's antisocial. I mean, it is.
It's very horrible, the destruction of things for the sake of destroying them.
Is this a consequence of affluence?
I mean, maybe I think it is happening. It's not, you know, it's happening generally, I think. The same complaint comes from people from all sorts of different countries. I think there's a loss of respect for authority, a loss of respect perhaps for parents, for school teachers, for authority generally. In societies, there's certainly a reduction in... there may not be a reduction in spirituality. I wouldn't be competent really to know that, but there is certainly a reduction in formal attendance at churches of all denominations, Christian and I think a non-Christian.
I'm wondering, as you talk, if our increased mobility isn't part of the culprit in this. If you're never going to leave the village or town in which you are, and somebody's always watching, and you have no way to get away,
absolutely,
and nobody's coming in,
yeah,
the moment that you unplug that, and you make me think of this as you talk about vandalism. Mm-hmm. Well, if suddenly nobody knows you did it,
and
you can your outrage at something or other can be publicly displayed, and there's no consequence.
Yes, that's absolutely so. We were much less mobile, and there were far more communities in which everybody really knew everybody else. And of course, in some ways, they had other good advantages that you could have in the village. Perhaps the village child or village person who was perhaps, you know, mentally a little disadvantaged, but they weren't carted off and put in an institution, because everyone knew that dear old George was harmless and did little jobs about the garden for people, and was the community looked after him in their way and supported him, you know. You did have a supportive community very largely.
And people were not disposable in the same way.
No, they weren't. No, they weren't. No. But I mean, we're never going to get back to that, are we? And there are more of us, and we live in a more crowded way, and we live in a much more materialistic society. And of course, we want these things, and we're not going to.
Oh, but there's a difference between the need and want, isn't there?
Oh, there
I want to correct yourself.
Want is one thing; need is another. Oh, it's extraordinary. I mean, the amount of things that young people have from prosperous homes now is quite astonishing. Quite
prosperous, but not necessarily rich.
There is a phenomenon going on. You, as a member of the House of Lords, perhaps can help me understand it, because I don't. There's this exercise. The House of Lords is being changed, and as best I can tell, is effectively being abolished. It's a 700-year tradition that, for better or worse, is being abolished. The devolution that is going on is from, particularly from an American standpoint, is striking. I don't think we know much about it. But taken as a whole, the kinds of political changes, which say in some ways the cultural and social changes within the country, seem from the outside to be fairly radical. Can you make sense of this?
When we return, I'm going to let you think about your answer for just a moment, if I may. We're going to get, I know it will be an insider's answer, because Lady P.D. James is a baroness who sits in the House of Lords. Bill Russell and I welcome you to return with us when she answers Bill's question. Just a moment, please.